they chased their answers, travelers through time and space, stopping anywhere long enough to learn, but briefly enough to escape involvement. The light in the distance grows brighter, even as the surroundings grow ever more bizarre. Questions grow darker, answers more involved, until reality itself becomes an academic concept, fit only to be dissected over a pleasant cup of tea.
Welcome, brothers and sisters, and all androgynies in between, or anybody else who happens to be listening to a special episode of Pagan Chaos Magic, the podcast. I don't want to call this one episode 9, because it's not really about chaos magic. It is, however, in a lot of ways about something that I just am still, to this day, very surprised how much comments have been generated, people interested in the fact that I'm a pagan parent and how I handle that, and that I talk about that. So we're still holding with the theme of pagan, and this is a long extended journal of the Dragon Sun. What I did was I pulled together some stuff I had written on some live journal posts. I used to write on a live journal with a small group of friends, like a lot of us do. I'm pushing the big 40, so we had live journal back in my day. I know everything is Facebook now, including my wife, but I'm still old and cantankerous enough to not have crossed into that great divide. This is about the consequences of having a child while being a pagan, some of the things that I had to do, some of the things I had to talk to my mother about, my father no longer being alive, and some unexpected surprises along the way. But it's not really about chaos magic, so we're just going to call it a special episode, Journal to Dragon Sun, all about how you came to be. Because I wish I knew what my dad was like, what things had happened when I was born. I know certain things about when I was born, but how they used to handle it back then was very different. They didn't let the men anywhere near the delivery room. The women were isolated. It's not like it is now. The fact that in the United States of America, if you decide to, you can, under most circumstances, if you're lucky enough to have health insurance, find yourself in a nice hospital where you can, as the father, be a part of the birth of your child. That's if you choose hospital birth. We had chosen a midwife birth. My wife, Faken, believes very strongly in midwifery, and I can't say I blame her. If you actually check the infant mortality rate in the United States, it's absolutely atrocious. I believe Cuba and Venezuela have better infant mortality rates than the United States, and I'm not a huge fan of either one of those governments. So the story of how that all came to be is all part of this. It's a series of posts that I've only lightly edited. You will notice that they're in the style of someone writing. I tried not to get too heavy-handed with that and pull out little bits that wouldn't make any sense to someone who wasn't inside a small circle of friends. But to set the mood, let's play some music. Two pieces tonight by Faith and the Muse. The first one is All Lovers Lost from the album Elyra. I think that's how you say Elyra. E-L-Y-R-I-A, Elyra. I know a girl named Elyra. Beautiful young girl. So I'm assuming that's how you say it. All Lovers Lost, Faith in the Muse. We'll be right back. first post that I'm going to read is from almost 2.5 years ago. It's when Fakin was pregnant. And, well, I'll read it to you. The name of the post was, "The Universe is Laughing at Me Again." For those of you who don't know, I consider myself a godless pagan. I don't worship any particular gods or goddesses. Yes, keep in mind, folks, it was 2.5 years ago. But I do believe in their manifestations, and I have my own beliefs as to why, if not always how. I only had the privilege of speaking to a goddess once, and she was surprisingly polite. The latest societal label that closest matches my spiritual outlook is eclectic pagan. Somewhere out in the ether, a 9-year-old incarnation of myself is looking on with horror from a nightmare. Look! Look what becomes of those who stray from the Lord's word! Look how the blessed are fallen when they meddle with false gods and sorcerers. Poor kid. So, groovy. Yay. Look at this pagan. Big deal. I'm pretty freaking sure if you're reading this, you know a few pagans if you aren't one yourself. Or you're at least sleeping with one. Or several. It's hard to tell with pagans. This, however, presents a unique situation with the upcoming birth of my child. And this is where the universe laughing at me part is. I just had to have the first conversation with my mom to lay the foundation of coming out as pagan. Bigger deal than you might think at first. Now, everyone thinks my mom is totally cool. I mean, really. Nobody dislikes my dear old mom. Ask anyone who has ever met her. She truly is a very sweet soul. She's the reason I survived adolescence. And I can tell you, it was touch and go for a few years there. My mother is one of the main reasons my rebellion against Christianity never involved hate for Christians. More a chip on my shoulder about Yahweh, I think. Since my mom is a very tolerant, but also a very devout Christian, she worries when she thinks that her children might be straying far afield from God's path. I know she hopes that having children will bring me back to, quote, the truth, unquote. I owe my mother a lot, and I have no wish to cause her worry, so I've always chosen to keep the experimental part of my life from troubling her. I have never lied, but I have never dictated my book of days and told her to read it either. Yeah, the laughing part. I am getting to that. Now, since I am not the kind of loathsome person who would deny his loving mother the company of her grandchildren for no good reason, I have to plan for the inevitable intersection of the well-known complete honesty of children and my mother's ears, and all the following consequences. Now, I know that plenty of pagans are completely in the broom closet with their own families, and I have no opinion upon that one way or another. Their path is not mine. I am certain that many very good high priests, high priestesses, prophets, and mystics are not out to their families. Now, I have no deep need to force awareness upon my mom of my cliched spiritual awakening. Now, that's really, really tacky. But children talk about everything. And until such a time as my children are old enough to choose their own spiritual path, I will teach them what their mother and I believe. So it will be necessary to break this concept gently upon my dear mom's consciousness. After a conversation with her today, she now understands that she is welcome to teach her grandchildren all about what she believes is the truth, as long as she prefaces it with, "and what grandma believes is, and ends the instruction with, "But your mommy and daddy may have different ideas," or something to that extent. It's a perfectly reasonable arrangement with a perfectly reasonable and lovely lady. She also knows that some of the rebuttals she may receive from her grandchildren will likely be very precocious. I paused and repeated the words, "very precocious." My mom may be innocent, but she ain't dumb. She caught the point. So, the first conversation is complete. Foundation laid for the second conversation. But easing into and through that conversation without wounding or worrying my mom was one of my better tap dances, if I do say so myself. The relief of getting through it all was more than I had expected it to be. And that's when it hit me. One thing that I was never going to do, have a child, led to another thing I was never going to do, come out to my mom about my spirituality. And that's when I heard the multiverse laughing at me. I'm gonna have a child, so I'm coming out to my mom. Now, if I made that sentence the title of this post, you likely would have read this post with significantly different expectations of its content, wouldn't you? At this point, the previously mentioned 9-year-old incarnation of myself has finally passed out from shock into dreamless sleep upon hearing such blasphemy from his future self's own mouth. And since, dear reader, the poor boy couldn't take any more, I will extend you the courtesy of closing. And that was the end of the post. I can report that me and my mom have had, I guess, suppose what you could call a second conversation. I was over visiting with my son, Dragon Son, just the other week. And a very big part of our spiritual life when I was growing up was praying before every meal. And that is still a very big part of my mom's life and something I need to incorporate a little bit more into my own spiritual practice, being thankful in some manner, shape, or form, in a demonstrable form, to those who look out for me and mine. And she, while my nieces and nephews are not her particular variety of Protestant, at Grandma's house, they pray to Jehovah. And my son was looking very intently because my mom had taken his cousin's little hands, because he has a cousin who's just 3 months younger than him, two little boys, had taken his cousin's hands and held them together and said maybe, you know, a 6 or 7 second thank you prayer to Jehovah, and thank you for this food. And Dragon Son was just staring at him. He's got that look in his eye. I know he's trying to figure out what's going on. And I said, "Well, son, your grandma's house, her house God is Jehovah. And in your grandma's house, you respect your grandmother's house God. And if she chooses to pray and say thank you to her house God, her guardian, her provider, for her food, then you do so as well under her roof." And my mother got the biggest smile on her face. And I have no problem respecting the God of anyone's house. I don't like pissing in anybody's Wheaties. Well, okay, some people's Wheaties. But they really have it coming, really, honestly. Don't you think? Well, I think. Or else I wouldn't do it, metaphorically speaking. Really, I'm strange, but I'm not that strange. Coming up on some interesting stuff that I wrote. This was what I wrote in my live journal right after I stumbled home from the birth of my child. But I'm going to play a little music first. This one is called Drum by S.J. Tucker from the Tangles album. Drum is beautiful piece of music. If you've had a chance to listen to her album, I think it's Tales from the Road. It's a long live piece, and she talks about drum being inspired by a conversation about there being no real true divisions between races, how we are all human, we are all one, we are all connected in ways we refuse to see, and that our hearts all beat the same. Maybe we dance with different rhythms here and there, and we have different cultures and customs and jewelry and clothing fashions and levels of wealth and poverty, but we are all still the same. And it's just a fitting song to play before I talk about the day that my son met his incarnation in this particular plane at this particular time.
Sensibility has failed, and yet the drum is still resounding on. Time is not yet done. There's still a chance to get back around to where it needs to be, children. Chance to get back to where we should have gone. We may find we have to hurry, may find we have to run. We're all the same heart and all the same drum, in spite of the sickness. It's pulled into me, it's pulled into you, it's pulled into the truth, yes, and pulled into our drum, which is the same and ever shall be. Say to me, no matter if your heart be free, share the mother's heartbeat. We share a common drum, 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 share a common drum.
Okay, this was a post that I posted just after, like I said, stumbling home from the birth of Dragon Son. I called it Accelerated Development, Rambling Thoughts. I have no idea why I called it Accelerated Development, but here's the post. Dragon Son, if you're listening, this was my state of mind. And before I read this post, I just want to say one thing. My wife, Faykin, worked very, very hard to get our house ready for a home birth. Our intent was, middle room was entirely devoid of furniture. There was going to be a birthing pool in the house, and we were going to have a home birth with a certified midwife. We had paid the money. She had had all of her pre-natal work done with the midwife. Everything was set to go. A week before this happened, I was on my way back from an assignment. I had told them that I was leaving in a certain space of time around my wife's birth, and that was the way it was going to be. And 1 week before that window opened, she felt a tremor. And she said, she asked the baby, "Please, baby, not right now. Just wait till your daddy gets home." And there were no more contractions. But when he came, well, let me read it to you. I can't even begin to put together the whole picture of the birth of this baby. But I want to give a few highlights while the house is quiet and my beautiful wife and child are sleeping. Monday night was perhaps the strangest trip I have ever had while being cold sober. 3 a.m. Monday morning. 1 full week before the baby's official due date. Faykin wakes me to tell me that she's had some mild contractions intermittently, and that her water just broke. She tells me, go back to get as much sleep as you can. It'll be quite a while before we even need to call the midwife. A woman's water can safely break 2 days before the birth actually happens. I napped for about another hour. We had been on a 4-day cleaning and decluttering binge, getting ready for the baby, and we were both exhausted. After an hour, I got up to finish a few minor touches to cleaning up the birth pool room. I spent an hour in the room next to Faykin, and I watched her as I cleaned up and ran a vacuum over the room one last time. Timeline gets a little fuzzy here. Finally, I'm satisfied the room is clean and ready for the midwife's birthing pool. I'm thinking that we need to decide if the contractions were at a point we should contact the midwife. I'm immediately a little shocked because I see a contraction hit her and saw her move right into a squatting position, supporting herself on a chair back, rocking and moaning and in a lot of pain. Whoa. I read the literature. She isn't supposed to have to use a physical contortion to deal with that level of pain for hours yet. I'm squatting behind her and I'm trying to talk to her. Sweetie, are you okay? I think maybe we should call the midwife now. My beautiful girl looks at me with a lost look and confusion and says, I don't know. Oh gods, she's already in transition. You can Google that if you're curious. It's a state of delivery. Then she starts screaming and writhing in pain. My woman has a pain tolerance that can make active duty Marines flinch. This was not the sort of screaming I was led to anticipate after watching at least 2 kajillion birthing shows with my wife. This was a level that triggered a level of fear for my wife I cannot even begin to explain. I looked up at the computer monitor she'd been sitting in front of. She'd been running a program that tracked the length of times and their length. She just had to slap the space bar at the right time and the data was tracked, so she didn't have to try to time anything when their length. She just had to slap the space bar at the right time and the data was tracked, so she didn't have to try to time anything when she was in off headspace. The computer was showing me she was having 90-second contractions every 5 minutes already. This was not going correctly. Fakin begs me to put her in the shower and run hot water on her lower back. Okay, great. I can do this. She's on all fours, and I've set up the running shower jet so the hot water is hitting her in the right spot. Her screams subside to loud moans, and I go running for the phone. I call the midwife. I give her an update. She explains that she is just coming back from a birth where the client's labor had stopped. She would rush back to that mom's house, group her bag and tools, and be right over for Fakin. Okay. I activated the professional. The plan is progressing. Must check on wife. Fakin is still on her hands and knees and weeping and screaming. I check the water, make sure the temperature is more to her liking, and try to talk to her. She is way into transition and really not making much sense. She insists she wants a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, but she won't budge from the shower. Okay, make sandwich. Put on plate next to shower. Time to make bed. Put on initial sheets. Put on plastic sheets. Put on birth cover sheets. Pull out checklist. Birthing pool room, check. Bed prepped in case of water birth not happening, check. Space cleared for midwife to put tools, check. All items to handle and deal with afterbirth and stuff, check. Peanut butter and jelly sandwich, check. Now my phone is ringing. It's the midwife. She's been pounding on the doors, windows, and calling non-stop to get the previously mentioned mother-to-be to open the door so she can get her midwifery kit. No one is answering. I explain the unusually accelerated delivery that Fakin appears to be in. I remember the conversation ending with something like, "I am driving to you now. I know your wife has gloves. We'll just have to deliver right there on your bed." Unfortunately, she could not give me any kind of an ETA. I go to my wife in the shower. She is weeping and telling me she can't stop fighting pushing. Then she slips all the way back into transition headspace and can't do anything but moan. I can't get her to talk. There is a voice in my head telling me that this was accelerating into a real problem. That little voice that tells you you are not having a first-time dad birth freakout, and that this is just going too fast. And then, out of nowhere, Fakin says, in a very focused voice, "This baby is coming too fast." She said it twice, calmly and clearly, and then slipped back into moans and screams. Okay. Scrub hands and hot, hot, hot water with some soap. Then do my best impersonation of a gynecologist and feel for the baby's head. Thank the gods, I don't feel anything yet. There's no crowning. The moans are now rather intense screams. I know my wife wanted to give birth as naturally as possible. I know she really, really wanted to have the baby at home. One last tried conversation. Sweetie, do you want me to take you to the hospital? My wife looks back at me, looking even more lost than before, and says, I don't know. I picked up the phone and dialed the midwife. She's having this baby right now. Do you know where Mount Clemens Regional is? Yes. Meet me there, click. I managed to get Faken out of the shower, into some loose clothes, and into the car. But I can attest to that a Honda Civic, with the passenger seat tilted all the way back, can accommodate a woman in labor. I relieved a little tension by putting on my emergency blinkers, constantly blowing my horn, taking my little Civic to unparalleled feats of urban street stunt driving via that kick-ass little hybrid. I admit, that part was a little fun. I pull up to the hospital emergency receiving doors, run in, grab the security guard and his wheelchair, and manage to get her into the hospital. The ladies behind the desk handle this sort of thing all the time. If the midwife can't make it, at least I have now surrounded my laboring wife with professionals, right? Right? While Faken is sitting in the wheelchair, she goes into a full contraction, and the look on the faces of the ladies at the desk look more terrified than mine had looked all morning. They grab her wheelchair and sprint her into a triage room. The OB happened to be sitting in that room doing paperwork. I helped lift Faken into the bed, and she had another screaming contraction. Things are a little hazy here. I remember moving to Faken's left and taking her hand. I was trying to stay out of the way of the five professional women who were working. My job, as I saw it, was to keep my wife focused and feeling safe. While I tried to keep her to maintain eye contact with me, I only heard snatches of conversation. But I remember the OB saying clearly, "The baby is crowning now. You are about to have your baby right now." This is while one of the med techs is still busy trying to put an IV in Faken's hand. The OB was on the opposite side of Faken, and she was holding her right thigh down. Faken's contractions were hitting hard enough that her legs were crossing as they hit. I remember the OB distinctly saying, "Will somebody grab her other leg?" I looked back to make sure someone was, and waited what felt like 5 minutes while no one did anything. As Faken's next contraction hit, I slid over and used one hand to hold her thigh down, since no one else seemed to have a brain but the OB, and kept the other one holding her hand. The OB looked me in the eye, shrugged, and went back to work coaching Faken. I liked that lady. Dragon's son was breathing air less than 2 minutes later.
And that's where that post ends. But I can pick it up because, see, this is the part of the interesting thing that I think me and my wife are a good balance. I'm really good in a crisis.
Faken has a hard time in the midst of crisis. However, when things are settled, she is very, very competent. And apparently, while I used to think that I not only handled the crises, but the post-crisis period very, very well, I didn't handle that so well after the birth. Dragon's son was not eating. He was screaming so loudly and so furiously because he had a hard time latching onto the nipple, that he would become so infuriated that he could never latch on. And he had to, it was a long and elaborate process of getting him to eat. So I'm freaking out at this point. My son, my newborn beautiful son, is not eating. My wife didn't seem too worried, but
she went ahead and gave him some formula, probably to calm me down. And the doctor handed me some Xanax prescription. I went and filled it and went home, wrote this. I can't sleep, so rambling instead. I admit, I've not eaten or slept much in a few days, and I am desperately waiting for the nice and legal doctor prescribed Xanax to kick in. This is a total new father overwrought sleep deprived posting, so nobody panic. But I have to write this down so I can try to sleep. My beautiful baby boy is not eating enough. Fakin's milk is coming in slowly despite pumping. So she made the wise decision to supplement Dragon Sun's feeding with baby newborn formula while she works on expressing her milk more fully with a lactation consultant. Brilliant. Except he's only eating half of the amount of formula he is supposed to be eating at this point. The baby is fine. Dragon Sun has the lungs and temper of his namesake. Fakin is not worried at all. The baby is alert and strong. Everything is great. But I personally feel like I'm hanging over the abyss. I've held this child in my arms, talked to him for hours about his family, our love for him, and my hopes for his future. I've picked him up and watched him quiet down from screaming to total silence, focus his eyes on me, hold my gaze, and do the damnedest impression of a two-day-old paying attention to what I was saying. I've seen a rainbow of past leading from this little soul in those deep gray blue eyes, and I see so much promise there. I've touched his blonde curly hair and rubbed it past shell-like ears, so much like my beautiful wife's. I know I'm overreacting. I know my son is getting nourishment anytime he wants it. His lungs work fine when he wants something. I know he's surrounded by knowledgeable professionals and a protective mother. And Mr. Big Man has to go home, take some medications, and try not to weep with worry for his son. Somebody's gonna come have to take away my badass documentation paperwork. Sleep soundly, my beautiful wife and feisty son. I am no longer the same man, and all the better for it. And that's where it ends. I want to play a tune right now by Faith and Muse from the album Alira called Heal.
Oh.
That channeled an exceptionally larger amount of emotion than I expected it to. I was right back there. My son is fine. He's 21 months old. He's in very good health. Everything is wonderful with him. I was obviously way overwrought there. But to go ahead and round out the show, I want to read two posts from several months later. First one goes like this. I could explain why this dream happened, what started it, why it changed, and how it has changed from such a horrible nightmare to such a good dream. But none of that matters, and the analysis is long and likely a narcissistic intellectual masturbation fest. So I'll skip to the good part. I have been having a dream since I can remember as a child. I'm a small child. I'm completely alone. And it's completely dark. It's cold and wet. I'm not lost because no one is coming for me. Ever. I am all alone and abandoned. I am crying so hard I am keening. It's a really horrible nightmare. Shortly after the beginning of my teen rebellion, so to speak, I had what can be best described as an episode. I'm not going to argue about semantics, but I call it gnosis. Call it teen angst cubed for all I care. There was a particularly fierce and physical confrontation in my personal physical life, and I could feel the air around me changing. During that episode, I swore a strange vow. In my fire and rage during the fight, I could hear that little boy crying in the dark. When I had finished the violent encounter, I turned my back on the enemy and screamed into the darkness of my mind. I am coming for you. I swear on my soul I am coming for you. Fucked up, I know. I was screaming back in time at myself in my head. But if you had heard the sound of that little boy cry, you'd have done the same. But that's when the dreams started changing. I never again dreamt I was the lost little boy. And I wasn't a child any longer in those dreams. I was a man. I was a full-grown man, covered in scars and marks of adulthood. But I was back in the same cold, dark, wet, lonely place I knew so well from my childhood nightmares. And I was searching my way through endless tunnels. And I was searching my way through endless tunnels. And I was searching my way through endless tunnels. And cutting my way through endless enemies toward that little boy's crying. And I was searching my way through endless tunnels. If I could just kill enough of the bastards to find the boy before they found him, I was getting that kid out. If I had to die along the way, I was getting that kid out. After all, it was a dream, and we are all the heroes of our private cinemas, aren't we? I started dreaming that dream as a teenager. But, as a teenager, I always dreamt I was an adult male while in the midst of the dream. As the years went by, I would get closer and closer to the boy, or personification of myself, if you prefer. Shortly before the dreams finally stopped, I found the boy in several recurring dreams. I found a small little towhead who looked exactly like my parents' pictures of me as a child. He was scared, alone, red-faced, crying, and with his little arms outstretched to me when I finally found him. And in my dream, I picked him up, taking him and myself from that dark and lonely place, rocking him on my shoulder and cooing. I told you I would come for you. I promised. I'll take care of you. I'm strong now. I'll protect you. Don't cry anymore. Shortly after that pleasant end to that series of dreams, a lot of good things happened in my life. Over that period of time, as the dreams were ending, I came to a much deeper understanding of who I am, and it did my soul a lot of good. It was one of a series of changes that has more than a few old acquaintances looking at me oddly these days. They don't always recognize the man they remember. I guess I didn't realize just how much I've changed in the last 15 years. So the other day, my son woke up in his crib while I was on baby monitor duty. My wife was down in the basement doing some laundry, so I got up from the living room to get Dragon Son when I heard his waking noises over the baby monitor. When he wakes up alone, he is not a happy camper. So I picked up my son, who was standing at the edge of his crib, crying and red-faced with his arms outstretched to me. I pick up my weeping son and carry him on my shoulder, cooing to him and telling him not to be so upset. Mama and Papa will never abandon him and will always be there for him, so there's no reason to cry. So I rocked my 9-month-old son on my shoulder and walked up and down the hallway, talking to him and calming him down. Then I caught a glimpse of myself in the hallway mirror. And that's when I recognized the body. Mine and his. The full-grown adult male body I was wearing in my dream since I was 14 was the body I was wearing in the mirror. With its long curly hair, goatee, broad shoulders, and stubborn extra 20 pounds on his frame. So unlike the teenaged, clean-cut, short-haired, clean-shaven boy. And the tow-headed boy on my shoulder looks identical to the pictures of me and my parents' family picture album. I'm glad the universe gave me that. I haven't remembered that dream for years. That sort of thing makes a lot of average daily pain of life just disappear for a short time while you revel in the wonder of it all. For all of the exhaustion, pain, and struggle life seems to dish out, sometimes it gives you a moment just to be really happy. The moments are sometimes fleeting, but often remembered. And that's where that ends. And to finish it up, I'm going to read the last short post. I entitled it, at the time, "What Are Daleks Doing in My Stargate Episode?" Unique decisions are presenting themselves to me in my personal life, since I had never really believed I was destined to live past 30. Certain avenues in life never even occurred to me. So, turning 39 and having a child leaves a feeling floating in the back of my mind that feels almost like I'm out of my place in time. Almost as if I was a character in a novel who tripped, hit his head, and woke up in a somewhat dissimilar plot line. One minute I'm Hamlet, slowly losing his mind and gaining a certain suicidal courage against a black backdrop of blood, lies, and the supernatural. Alas, poor Yorick. I knew him, Horatio, a fellow of infinite jest, of most excellent fancy. He hath borne me on his back 1,000 times, and now how abhorred in my imagination it is. My gourd rises at it. Thumped ahead. Yorick, deal the damn cards and quit making me laugh. Horatio is already rolling on the floor laughing. The man can't even drink his mead for Odin's sake. Ophelia, bring us another round, my dear. That slightly eerie feeling comes over me whenever Dragon Son stares at me, almost like I jumped storylines. I know that look he gets on his face when he's studying me. I used to wear it at his age. A furrowed brow and a burning, fiery desire in his eyes to learn everything there is to know. And I remember the case of hero worship I had for my dad. And I see signs of it stirring in his eyes sometimes. for a 20-month-old, 21-month-old, he demands an awful lot of attention from his father. The idea that a smart young child with my temperament is going to look to me for several years as his most influential male role model makes me warm and cold in alternating mood shades. All right, universe, you asked for this child. I'll train him as best as I can, but don't blame me if he pulls down the foundations of modern man and rebuilds anew. And that's where that ends. And I'm going to finish up this special episode, The Dragon Son, by saying, hey, son, if you're listening, Papa loves you very, very much. I'm going to finish up with an S.J. Tucker song, also off the Tangles album, called Baba Yaga. Now, the reason I'm mentioning this is, you can tell from this podcast, if you've actually listened this far, that I love my son and my wife as much as it is possible to love. There are kids, though. There are kids all over this country, all over this world, abandoned, that don't have parents to care for them. Some of them are runaways. Some of them are throwaways. And I really have to find that album from SJ that I got, Songs from the Road, because she explains this song that I'm about to play for you, called Baba Yaga. Baba Yaga is a famous, famous figure from ancient mythology. I can let you look her up. But the idea behind SJ's song, as she explains it, is what if Baba Yaga reincarnated in our modern day to teach and look over those throwaway and runaway children? And it's just a wonderful and beautiful piece of music. So I'll ask you, are you in a position, are you in a place in life where you can at least help throwaways, the runaways, the trapped ones? If you can, think about it. If you can't, think about it someday when circumstances change, and you might be able to. Here's Baba Yaga from S.J. Tucker off the Tangles album. Hope to talk to you next time. Hope you hang around.
Baba Yaga woke today in the form of a sage black lady, weaving tales on the edge of the city. Exit 93. The children of the overpass leaned in to listen to the words, to the wisdom of the ages, and the story set them free. The grown-up mother watched tonight from her vantage point above. In the cloud space high above the city's anger, from a safer place than we, she watched the cell phone generation as they shrank away from the real. They called the highway patrol to ask Baba Yaga to leave, but she would not be escorted. Shook with laughter inside her shawl, asked the nice young policeman, where shall I go? Your brothers may witness me tomorrow, hear the same words you resist. Learn from the prophecy that escapes you here what you refuse to know. She smiled then all toothless. The rock of ages standing still. At the campfire of Baba Yaga, the street children held their dance. She turned to face the brave ones, those who listened without fear. All of those who left their houses, their highways, and left their reality just to hear her speak now. Oh, who took that chance? She said, I will be here when you're ready. My fire will still burn when yours starts to go. She said, I have always been here. I with my fearless feet. She packed her bag and left the house long before he rose. He awoke without his coffee, checked her room, but she was gone. Gone to meet someone he'd never seen. He sighed with a smile. She's a woman, it's the path she chose. Well, Daddy's little woman's on the edge of town. Can't remember where she came from, no. Heaven only knows what's become of her lover. Left her high and dry, we suppose. She lingers on the freeway with her eyes upon the smile of the wise and ancient Baba Yaga. And I'll let you know. Oh.